Hi, this is Robert with Cell 15, and you're listening to Sonic Perspectives.
And you're listening to Sonic Perspectives. I'm Mark Boardman, contributing writer and reviewer. Back in 2014, a band out of Pennsylvania called Cell 15 came out with an intriguing concept album about a person hitting bottom and then finding some measure of redemption. Very personal story for the man behind Cell 15, for it was Robert Scott Richardson's story, and he told it on that remarkable album called Chapter One. Robert Scott Richardson is with us today. Welcome to Sonic Perspectives.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Robert, most of our listeners probably are not familiar with you or Cell 15. Can you give us a little bit of your background, how you got into music, and how that evolved to Cell 15?
Well, I'm old, so I've been doing this for quite a few years. Music was in my blood since birth. Went through, raised in the church, sang a lot of songs in the church. Eventually started playing a musical instrument. Started off just banging on my parents' furniture, so they realized I should be a drummer. And so they bought me and my brother a drum set and a guitar, and we started a band from there. But Mom also said you need to get a music education, so pick another instrument that you can use in band. So I picked the trombone, which I don't play anymore. And that way I was, able to learn to read music. And some of my favorite times in all of school was high school band, all the band classes. I was very involved in the music department in there. Got out of school, I had played the bass guitar in one band, and I played drums in another band, and then tried to play keyboards, but that didn't go well. Then we moved from Indiana to Pennsylvania, started up another band there, and was playing drums, and it was a learning experience all around. Traveling as much as we did, I was a military baby, so we did a lot of traveling and meeting new people and meeting new musicians and trying to make things work. And eventually I joined a full-time band. A band called Hybrid Ice out of Danville, Pennsylvania. I was 21 years old at that time. And that's where I got my real lesson. I was hired as a keyboard player, even though I didn't know how to play keyboards. That in itself is an interesting story. The band that was hiring me, their keyboard player was killed in a tragic accident. And they were looking for a replacement person. And I used to play drums, but we played a lot of King Crimson. And so I always had a little keyboard sitting next to me. And the sound man for Hybrid Ice remembered that. And he thought I knew how to play keyboards. So he called me up and I did an audition. My mother does play the piano. So we got together and I had to learn how to play three songs, a song by Led Zeppelin, a song by Head East, and a song by Queen. And that was the tough one because it was Bohemian Rhapsody. So remember, I had never played the keyboards before, so it was a very quick learning experience. But I was given the gift of talent. I was able to pick it up relatively quickly. My fingers hurt a lot, and I just wanted it so bad I stayed with it, and I've been playing keyboards ever since.
Now, was that the period where you've talked about before you basically were practicing or performing 8 hours a day to try and get your chops down?
Yes, because I didn't know how to play the keyboards. I have a good ear, so I can hear the right notes and the wrong notes, but to get my fingers to work, I had to knuckle down. I wanted to do it so bad. So I spent literally 8 hours every day doing nothing but playing the keyboard.
That is a lot of practice.
Yeah, I needed it.
Is it at that point that the keyboards became your primary instrument as opposed to being the drums?
I still think they're both primarily my instrument. Playing drums to me comes natural. I don't really have to think about it. But with the keyboards, it's a whole different world, because it's not like you're just sitting playing the piano. You're playing synthesizers and Hammond organs and trying to develop textures of how one sound blends with another sound. And then just writing songs, I couldn't really do that on the drums. So it opened my world to melody and harmony and chord structure and theory, just learning how to play. And I learned a lot just by learning a lot of other songs. So the band that we were in, they played a lot of Yes and Steely Dan, Kansas. So it was a great learning experience.
And certainly prepared you to later on start doing your own prog-based music.
Yeah, I always thought Hybrid Ice was going to go that direction, that we would be more of a progressive rock band. And we would have made a really good progressive rock band because everyone was talented. We had 5 lead singers in the band. It would have been something, but that just wasn't where we were going to go. We went more for the mainstream 80s hair band. And while it was fun to do that, it really didn't work for me. I always liked just my heroes of Yes, Genesis, King Crimson, Gentle Giant. That's really where my heart went. And when I tried to even present songs to the band, they were always just too weird for them.
So at what point did Hybrid Ice go into the cooler?
Well, it started, I was with them for On the Road. We literally played 7 nights a week for almost 16 years, all through the 80s when you could do that. And in 91, I got arrested. I think that's pretty much what started the whole journey as to where I'm at today. I was a crazy rock and roll musician, and I was out of control. And getting arrested one night for possession of a controlled substance, eventually going to jail over that whole thing, was a real wake-up call for me.
In what way?
Well, I'm lucky to be alive. I mean, to live through what I lived through in the 80s, you know, the alcohol I consumed, the drugs I consumed, the insanity of it all. Even when I got arrested and went to court, I thought the judge, you know, he just didn't know who I am. You know, I'm Bob. My head was on backwards. I really thought I was the big, you know, a big deal. And I'm not. I'm not a big deal at all. And somebody, one of my friends, Mick, pointed that out to me. You know, in this whole universe of ours, I'm just one tiny little speck. You know, this earth's been here for a long, 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 long time. And if I'm lucky to get 70, 80 years out of it, it's not really a big thing when considering how old this planet is. And I'm not a big deal, but I thought I was. I thought I was a big deal.
So you spent 6 months in jail, and what was your cell number?
You want to take a guess, Mark?
Cell 15.
Right on. That's really good.
So obviously this had an impact on you, not just in turning your life around, but it was an experience that I guess sort of spurred you on musically as well.
Well, when that had happened, I had the fear of going to jail. And then living through that and learning what I learned, that, you know, there's nothing worse than having all of your rights taken away from you. You know, you go to jail, you get your blanket, your pillow, your cup, your fork, knife, and spoon, and that's it. And that's no way to live. And I learned that in there. It's just, I don't want to be here. I really don't. And so many people were there and had been there before. And I was talking to one of the prison guards, and he asked me the question, how many people do you think have been here for the first time? And I said, I don't know, maybe half of them. And he said, no, it's like 80% of these people have been here before. And he looked at me and he said, you'll be back. And that struck a nerve. It's just, I do not want to go back. So the only way I can do that is to get my act together. So luckily I went to a rehab. I got out of jail and stopped drinking. And that turned my life around, just taking that away.
That happened in 1991. It took about 20 years, a little over 20 years, for you then to put that into the form of Chapter 1. What happened during that process to actually come up with the music, the lyrics, and then put it down on recording?
I think the music was always there. I just didn't have the wherewithal to do it. When I got out of jail and eventually I left Hybrid Ice, I went out and got a real job, as we say. And I started working for a music store. That came natural. I was in the keyboard department. That came natural. I love to read manuals. I know that's a little weird, but I do love to read manuals. And eventually I opened my own store. I sold pianos for, all the way up to Steinway pianos. So that, I kind of put the music thing on hold in that aspect. You know, I'm still in the music business, but on the retail end. And eventually I became a dealer for Pro Tools. And so I was selling Pro Tools and went out to San Francisco, learned how to operate their system, came back here, and eventually opened a recording studio. And then I had access to really good gear. And then in 2008, when the stock market pretty much tanked, all my businesses closed. People stopped buying pianos. So I had the studio. So I went and worked directly in the studio. And I had some downtime in 2011. And I just made the decision to start recording some songs that I had in my head and got busy. And eventually it turned into what you hear today on Chapter 1.
You have said that the lyrics actually came to you before the music did. I guess those stories and your experiences really made a mark in that way.
Yeah, well, some of the songs I had literally written while I was in jail. Man with a Gun, Shadow, those songs were, I wrote, I didn't have a musical instrument, so all I had was my bunk, and I looked at the top, and it had five rungs on it, and I put the musical notes on there, and then I just charted it. I still have those, by the way.
Do you?
I made my own sheet music paper and put the lyrics in there and guessed, because I didn't have any reference of pitch. And some of those I still have. That's pretty nice to have that. That's a big memory thing for me. And so it all started there. And then when I started writing the rest of the record, it pretty much just happened because everything, I lived it. So I didn't have to think of a dream world or anything. This was reality to me.
When it came time to put it down, to record it, you were pretty much the man. You did most of it, except when it came to the guitars.
Yes. I've tried to play the guitar. I just don't do it. Well, I can play acoustic a little bit and play some chords, but I just never really could develop it. And I was lucky. I was surrounded by people who do play the guitar. I had an intern, Mike Caprice, who was here. He played the guitar on Manny. He was a young kid, so he had that metal sound. My friend Craig Cady, who's one of the strangest people in the world, he came up with some of the stuff that I would have never thought of. Another friend, Steve Clay, he came in and played some bluesy stuff. And another local hero around here, Ronnie Rhodes, he came in and played some bluesy stuff. I did play some guitar on the record, but it's mostly just rhythm.
What I noticed was the different guitarists, as you mentioned, each one sort of had his own style and his own background, and they really gave each song that they were on a different take on it because of that.
Yeah, I think so. I think you can really, I can hear it. I don't think, and any guitar player I've had to join up with the band, Shane Jones is with me now. He's trying to learn the style of five different guitar players. So he's kind of like, how does this work?
Well, just so long as he doesn't ask for the pay of five different guitarists.
Yeah, checks in the mail, Shane.
The One of the things that I noticed, there is a motif, there is a certain structure that starts off in chapter one, and you can hear it sort of pop up again and again, and certainly comes up again at the end in Don't Kill the Messenger. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, there is not only a thematic story that's going on in the lyrics, but musically there is that connection too.
I like doing that. I like finding a theme, we'll call it a theme, at the beginning of the record, and every now and then inserting that theme, even though it's in a different song. I like writing like that. It just kind of completes the whole thing.
One thing that it's pretty evident when you listen to various songs here is that you have an affinity for Pink Floyd and the kind of sound that they had, not just on Dark Side of the Moon, but various of their albums, not only with spoken words coming in, sort of like Roger Waters would do, but some of the guitar themes also seem to echo that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pink Floyd. I've seen them, three or four times. I'm old enough, I actually saw the original Dark Side of the Moon tour. They left an impression on me. It just, every song doesn't have to be this crazy fast song. You know, you could sit back and especially Roger Waters, some of the things, because he does a lot of spoken stuff. I don't know if I really did any spoken stuff so much, but just the way I sing it, it's sometimes a mood. Just mm-hmm. want to get back and relax a little bit. And then sometimes you want to let it rip. So it's nice to be able to go one direction and go another. I think that makes it easier to listen to, because if it's the same thing and over, I think you'll get bored.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of, funk. There's a rhythm to several of your songs too that have a beat to it and really sort of you can tap your toe to it and dance to it.
Yeah, I always try to bring it back, because you know we can't stay in 7/4 or 7/8, you know, because if you look at some of my track sheets, you know, you got one measure of 6/8 goes into one measure of 5/4, and it goes, you can trip it up. But every now and then 4/4 just kind of brings it back. And so it allows you, if once it's almost like the vocal thing, if you're doing so much where you don't bring it back to make the listener, you know, okay, that, you know, I get that, and then go off on another trip.
One of the things that you've also got in most of the songs on this one, there is a sweep, usually a chord progression that goes up and is very uplifting. And it's the kind of thing that Prague is well known for. But for you, it really sometimes sort of comes out of nowhere and bam, there it is, a real emotional high.
Well, that's the fun part of writing, especially with the technology today. You can, you know, arrange a song, because I take one song and just arrangement is very, very difficult. And how do you get from one part to the next and still make it interesting or doesn't sound like a train wreck? So it's fun that you experience the same thing that I'm experiencing when I'm writing it. It's just, how do I get from this part, and are we going uplifting or am I trying to bring you down? It's the old theory, you know, minor chords, sad, major chords, happy, putting all that into perspective while you're writing. It makes it really interesting. I love doing it.
That was one of the things that stood out to me on chapter one, is with the lyrical theme, this could have been a real downer. I mean, it could have been just, oh my gosh, I got busted. I got shoved into jail. There's the man with the gun. The chances are I'm going to be back in here. I'm lost. But it doesn't come across that way. Part of it is because at the end, with the message, the messenger, you've got some hope that things are going to be out there and things are going to be better. But it's not just the lyrics. It's the music also sweeping up.
That I just got lucky doing. But once again, as you're putting it together, and tying it to the lyric and the theme, you can make a song that, if you got happy lyrics to a dark music bed, doesn't really work. So there's just, I thought it through. I had so many writes and rewrites just to make it work. That's why it took me a long time to complete. But thinking all that through, but I'm glad you are experiencing and able to experience what I experienced, because the whole thing was an experience for me. And the record could have just stayed down. It could have been a drag the whole way through. Woe is me. But that's not where I'm at. I'm here to celebrate some things that I've learned in my life. And if I can pass that message on to someone else, even if it's one person, that there is a way to, you know, that I turned my life around and here's how I did it.
When you got everything finished, when it was all done, the CD is out, take a look at the packaging, the whole bit, was there a feeling of relief as if you had sort of finished that chapter, the chapter one, I guess, that chapter of your life by being able to produce it and put it out there for the public?
It was a big question mark for me, because I didn't know if anybody would want to hear it. It's really, because it is, some people, I remember my old sound man, Chris Stutz, came in and I let him listen to the album for the first time. And just after playing the first song, Chapter One, he just kind of sat there in awe. And it's just like, that's a lot of stuff. Almost like it was too much for him to take in at one time. And it is. It's the whole album is, I've had a lot of albums like that where I've purchased a good progressive band album and listened to it the first time and it was just, I didn't get it. But then I listened again and I started to get it. And then the more I listen to it, the more I start to understand what it's all about. I think that's why I like progressive rock so much, as to listening to My Sharona, you know, and you listen to it once and you got it. I love taking the journey, trying to figure out how other people are coming up with what they're coming up with. Progressive rock is what I've always slated as the new classical music of today.
So you got a band together, and how much have you been able to perform this in public?
Quite a bit. It started off with my drummer and I, and we played to a sequence track. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of hard to do, but we wanted to play, and we just couldn't find anybody around here that, one, could do it, two, had the time, three, had the interest to do it, because it's a lot of work to be, well, any band, it's a lot of work if you put the time in. And so finding people who are committed to do that, because it's not a jam band. You can't do that. So I'm very fortunate now, but many years later, I finally have the other four musicians that's going to help me get this out there. And I'm real happy we're playing Rossfest. We're working real hard. I spent the week up in New York with the keyboard player, Andrew, who's a great keyboard player, but we had a lot of work to do to prepare this. So we think we're there and going to have rehearsals to prepare for Rossfest.
May's going to be a big month for you, because it's not only Rossfest, but your new album's coming out too.
Yeah, when I found out that we had the Rossfest gig, and I had a lot of my pre-production work done for River Utopia, the new CD, you know, I probably would have taken my time, but now that I have this thing about setting goals, and my goal was to have the CD finished for Rossfest. And that's been tough, because I had to finish the record. I literally lived in the studio. I mean, 24/7, literally lived in it until it was done. Then now I've got to rehearse it and perform it in less than a month. So yeah, we're really busy right now, which is great. I love it.
River Utopia is the new one. It's not Chapter Two.
No, I didn't want to. If I had decided to do Chapter Two, then there would be Chapter Three and Chapter Four, and I just didn't want to go there.
Is it a concept album?
No, I thought it might be, However, it just didn't happen that way. And I don't want to, I like the freedom of this one. It doesn't, when I play the chapter one, I almost feel like I have to play it in the correct order or it won't work. This one, we could put any song in any part of the set list and it should work.
Mm-hmm. Musically, how is this different from chapter one?
I don't know. I thought it wasn't as prog as chapter one, but then talking to other people, there's some more proggy stuff to it. But there's some songs that are pretty straightforward. I don't think I can compare the two. It's a whole new thing for us, having a different drummer play on the record, different bass player, guitar players, another keyboard player. So it's kind of a new sound, except for you'll recognize my voice because it's still me singing. But I hope it's a step forward. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's... You never know until you put it out there and get feedback. I like it.
It's supposed to be out by May 15th?
That is our release date. So, yes. But I have ordered it. It is done. I have ordered it. And hopefully they'll arrive real products. So I'll have them for sale at Rossfest.
Well, I suspect that will sell.
I hope so. We got t-shirts and we got all kinds of stuff. So we kind of got to vamp up our website, which is www.cell15, that's CELL15.com.
It's like a real rock band.
It's like a real rock band. Yeah. We've got a website and trying to get all that. A video. I got videos that we're doing. We're going to be videotaping a lot of the rehearsals. And I just hope that somebody gets in an argument or will get in a fight, because that's what everyone wants to see anyway. So, you know, maybe I'll take a pie with me and throw it across the room and try to hit Dan, the bass player, in the head just for that video moment. It's all about entertainment.
It's all about the entertainment.
I do like the fact that Cell 15 is entertaining. That has been very important to me and what I learned with Hybrid Ice is people don't come to just hear you, they come to see you. So we are working on making sure that you're going to have fun when you see the show.
Robert will probably not be wearing a silver cape or anything like that, though.
No, Rick's already done that. So
it's been a pleasure, and I have told many people, Cell 15 Chapter 1 has become one of my favorite albums for the year. It is excellent, and what I have heard from River Utopia is also very special, and I've been putting it on repeat, repeat, repeat.
Good to hear. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate what you do to help us get the word out there.
Well, I think you'll probably get the word out there yourself by performing at Rossfest and getting out there and doing some more gigs.
Yeah, I can't wait to do that. It's, you know, I love recording. I love spending time in the studio. I like writing songs. But my most favorite thing is being on stage and performing. I love to do that.
Well, good luck with Rossfest and with everything else and with the sales on the new CD.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very, very much.
Robert Scott Richardson, the man behind Cell 15. The first album is Chapter 1. And the upcoming release, which is out on May 15th, is River Utopia. And as he said, you can pre-order it at cell15.com. And they will be at Rossfest in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, Saturday, May 5th at 11 a.m. And as we go out, I'm Mark Boardman, and this is Sonic Perspectives. You can find the latest in music news, reviews, features, and more at sonicperspectives.com. Going to hear a little bit from that new album. This is Looking Glass from River Utopia. We'll be right back.
surviving.